Joint Ways and Means Committee, Subcommittee on General Government. This morning we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2901. And with that, Mr. Weiland, can you...
Mr. Chair, members, briefly, there are members that can, there are people here that can explain the bill better than I. It's 2901 essentially establishes, allows the treasurer to establish or requires him to establish a collateral pool for financial institutions that have small, that are smaller in nature, and this would allow them to put up collateral in a pool to, for deposit of public funds. The bill went through the House. We have the, I think it's the A version is the one before you. And it went through the House. It came to the Senate, was sent directly to Ways and Means. I passed out the staff measure summary from the to you before. We also gave you the fiscal impact statement. There is a modest fiscal that we also gave you the -A3 amendment, which only provides necessary expenditure limitation to the treasurer for purposes of implementing the bill. We have discussed that with the treasurer's office. They will need one additional staff for purposes of there's some monitoring and working with the various financial institutions. So we do have approval from the co-chairs to work the bill with the amendment for the expenditure limitation.
That's for the A3
amendment. The A3 amendment.
Okay. And first here, and I don't know, I see we have Representative Cowan. Representative, was it on the general bill or one of the amendments that you wish to speak? Would you please? Good morning, Representative. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jean Cowan. I'm the state representative from District 10, Lincoln County. I live in Newport. The reason I'm here today is, please don't look at me as an expert on anything in the banking world. But this particular bill, House Bill 2901, is sponsored, as you know, by Representative Butler, who's tied up in another committee. And with his blessing, I offered to come and put in my two bits worth, if you will, for moving this bill promptly. It's extremely important to the county treasurers, and I have heard from a number of them and their organization, as well as from my local banking community. The change in the collateralization process that I couldn't begin to fully explain will allow them to invest some of our local funds in local banks and allow those local banks then to put back into our communities, and that's kind of the bottom line for it. When this bill was heard in the House, the fiscal referral to Ways and Means was rescinded, and that's the reason it's moved forward as far as it has. I'm not going to differ with the Treasurer's Office if they feel like some of their job descriptions would be changed a bit in order to do this. But I do think that it is important in our local communities. It's something that we can do to allow county treasurers the opportunity to do what they would have liked to have done before and were unable to, and why they were investing most of their funds, have been investing most of their funds in the pool rather than in local banks. And our local bankers would like to see this move forward, and I would just encourage you to move it on and let's get it out this time. I think it's something we can do for local government and our local communities and investment in our local communities. With that, you've probably heard everything I know, but if you have any specific questions, I can try to answer them.
The only questions I would have, Representative, is it would have to do whether you're still in a mild state of depression from the outcome and the loss of the wager with the representative of House District 57.
Well, with adequate medication, I'm trying to pull out of that. But because I have some ties to Union County as well, I'm able to live with the success of Union County.
I did appreciate it when I heard you had those close ties to Union County, which certainly had to make relieve a little bit of the angst that you, pain that you had with that. So,
for anyone who doesn't know, Union County can now boast two state championships teams, the Imbler-Elgin girls softball team and the LeGrand Tigers baseball team. But they beat Newport to do it.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for the representative?
Thank you for your time. And
thank you very much, Steve, for being here. We appreciate your testimony a lot. Thank you. And with that, I'm advised by staff that we have some people, whether they're ones who have signed up or whether they haven't signed up, who are eminently qualified to explain to us the bill and the Dash 3 amendments to the bill. And who would that be?
Would the treasurer's office like to come forward to talk to it? The Dash A3, I don't know that I gave you a copy, did I, Darren? It takes your fiscal impact and gives you the expenditure limitation. The intent then it would be we would provide position authority also with the Dash A3 amendment for purposes of implementing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. The A3s, I believe, since I haven't seen them.
You can trust me, Darren.
And I do trust Dallas.
It's from the government you can trust.
That's right. We're here to help. I'll give the finance division, thank you. I have copies in stereo. They give the finance division a position to implement the changes in the bill. There currently is a collateralization process in the state. The enabling statutes are OS Chapter 295. This is a significant rewrite of Chapter 295, and it creates a great deal of systemic efficiency in the collateralization process. In Oregon, we have kind of an antiquated, cumbersome process. This greatly streamlines it. It streamlines it at my expense, and a great deal of responsibility of monitoring, of legwork, of reporting is placed on the treasurer's office that currently is spread across a number of entities. And we have been in discussion with the banks and the local governments that brought this forward and understand the efficiencies and the reasons for it and can support it, but we have to be able to resource it to be able to pull off the duties that are required of us in the bill. And that's what the fiscal impact is all about.
Questions for the Representative Cromwell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Darren, because this is a major rewrite of the current statute, and you testified that it creates more work for you. How much of that work is going to be transferred from other folks because of the rewrite? Because I would assume that there's also some things that because of this you don't have to do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, no, I don't think so. I don't think there's anything now really that we don't have to do. Currently, in the current statute, the collateralization of banks is monitored by what's called the pool manager. We're the pool manager for two banks currently. In the pool manager concept goes away, and the treasurer kind of becomes the global pool manager, although it's no longer a term used in the statute, and we'll be in that role for all institutions that hold public funds, not just two, but every institution that holds public funds will be reporting to the treasurer's office. We'll be monitoring the collateralization of every institution that pledges collateral to hold public funds. We'll be reporting to the institutions and to the local governments on collateralization. We'll be receiving reports from the institutions and from the local governments on who local governments are reporting on to us on who their banks are, on who their custodian is, on what their public funds deposits are. There's a reporting process now that's required quarterly that currently isn't required, where the banks will be reporting to the treasurer on the deposits, the public funds deposits that they're holding. It's a significantly different world. There's better control in the system. There's less cost in the system to the institutions. Because it's a pooled concept, the institutions are able to pledge less. At the same time, we're able to increase the systemic amount of protection that's available to the system. It's a good system, and there'll be less pool managers out there monitoring this, and there'll be less administrative effort on the part of the local governments and the banks to manage it on a day-to-day basis. But the cost of that is that we take a much larger role on.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So currently, you're just dealing with two institutions. Now you'll be dealing with every bank, but with this bill, but currently the banks that are reporting more often. Are they reporting every time the collateral changes, or are they? Is it a matter of, because now you mentioned that they'll all be reporting quarterly.
Yes.
So I'm trying to figure out how that, you know, how this creates more work. I guess I have to take your word for it, but.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, the other banks don't report to the Treasurer now. They report to other pool managers, who could be other banks. The Federal Home Loan Bank acts as a pool manager at Federal Home Loan Bank in Seattle. So the Treasurer only plays that role for two institutions. And we enter in all institutions. We'd have a role with all public funds depositors now, but not this monitoring role. All public funds depositors enter into an agreement with the Treasurer. We'll have to rework all of those agreements and enter into new ones relative to this. But we don't have the active monitoring of the collateral and the process. When a local government pledges or makes a deposit, they ask for what's called a certificate of participation. The pool manager issues those. We only issue those for two banks.
Thank you,
Senator Johnson.
When you said you have to resource this, be specific.
I'm going to add an accountant to monitor the collateralization, to monitor the reports, to the treasurer's reports that comes from the institutions, to create reports. So that's one FTE, which is an accountant, too.
Okay. And follow up. And how about any technology? I don't have a sense of the scope of how many reports you're going to be managing. It seems, by your description, a lot.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, honestly, exactly how we address the reporting issues, we haven't even figured out yet. I'm confident that our IT staff will be able to develop the reporting procedures through our databases that we'll need. I don't believe there'll be any significant software. This would be a customized kind of application. There's not going to be any canned packages available to me. And I'm confident that our IT shop will be able to support me in that.
And one more
follow-up.
Can you give a sense of scale? Will there be hundreds of transactions that you'll be monitoring, thousands, 10?
Oh, hundreds. The banks actively manage their collateral. They'll move assets in and out of their collateral mix. Different banks manage it in different ways. Some banks will just pop some securities and pledge some securities and let them sit for an extended period of time. Other banks manage it much more actively. You'll have, as banks are acquiring new deposits, their collateralization levels will change. All quarterly, we'll be getting reports from approximately 60 pledging banks right now. And we'll have to consolidate that. We have to make computations based on that to figure out what the appropriate collateralization levels are. Given certain kinds of mixes and limits that are in the bill, the collateralization levels for banks can change based on those outcomes. So.
One more follow-up.
Follow-up.
What kind of collateralization typically is it? I mean, is this all money?
Fixed income securities.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay. Question for staff. This 786, is that general fund money? Is that the other funds?
Mr. Chairman, this would be other funds. The source of the other funds is that the Treasurer is allowed to charge the banks for the cost of the pool.
Okay. Any other questions on on this? Senator Johnson?
Have those rates been set? Or do the banks have any idea, do your customers have any idea what the rates are going to be? Because it occurs to me that if they balk at whatever the rate structure is, then this whole framework doesn't work.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, they're here, and they have been well aware from the beginning of what the fact that we'll have a fiscal impact relative to this. Again, it's spread across all pledging institutions. There really isn't a rate that's established. What we'll do is we'll charge them for the expenses we incur that are directly attributable to the program. We'll distribute it back on a pro rata basis based on the amount of deposits that the institutions hold.
Thank you.
What happened to the Treasurer's Office making money for us?
We don't make any money on this deal.
They keep our money safe. It's a better deal, too.
Well, I understand that. Appreciate that. Other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't see in the amendment, Dallas mentioned earlier that there would be a not only the expenditure limitation, which I see here, but also the added FTE. I don't see that in the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't put the positions in the bill. We will accomplish that through the budget report and the authorization of this committee to establish the FTE. So that's how it will be communicated.
Mr. Chair, the FTE is general fund money?
No, it's funded with
that. It's funded that also.
Yeah. And I'll clarify a bit. And Treasurer's Office, I pursued this with them. Did they need the limitation? And there was, at the time we did their budget sum, there was an existing vacant position. They have since filled that. They don't have a lot of staff there. And this position would be needed because of the extra work. And so that's why it's a rather modest amount to amend the bill for, quite honestly. But it enables us to formalize the position also going forward then.
So that brings up another question, Mr. Chair. Is it going to be initially listed as a permanent position, or is it going to be listed as a temporary position? And if it's a permanent position, then what from this 86786, what will the roll up from that be?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the fiscal impact statement, I think was distributed, the roll up would be, I think, in the next biennium about $111,000. If memory serves me correct.
That's correct.
It will continue to be funded by other funds.
It will continue to be other funded, and I believe it will be a permanent position because this statute doesn't have a sunset.
Thank you, Senator Bates. Senator Bates.
Mr. I'm sorry, although we had a leadership meeting, ran over. I got several notes from my local county treasurer who was very strong in favor of this bill because he felt there was greater safety in this. And I noted in reading materials last night that Washington State's used this for 35 years. And if I'm asking a question that's already been covered, I apologize. Do other states have similar programs like this to have a pooling of collateralization in order for safety? Is that a pretty common practice in Oregon, unusual not having that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, it's all across the board. Washington does have a model or a pooled model, and this is somewhat based on that. Some states actually don't collateralize funds at all. Some states, each local government collateralizes from at varying levels. It's still all across the board across the country.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I feel uncomfortable about this is that I am not a banker and I'm not a financial wizard, and I can attest to that if you look at my personal finances sometimes. This appears to me to be a step in the right direction, and unless there's some devil in the details that I don't understand, which is quite possible, this looks like a pretty good deal to me.
Thank you, Senator. If there are no other questions for Darren, do we want to talk to the industry here and see whether the banking industry is present and wants to speak to that? I got a whole bunch of people signed up, but I don't know whether to. Is this Tim and Ken and Sherry that we're looking at? And understand we're at this particular juncture talking about the bill and the Dash 3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, is Mr. Martinez in favor of this bill?
And that gives us pause.
It does. Yeah, I was a yes, but I'm not so sure.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. Hopefully, Senator Bates, by the time this panel is done, you will be comfortable once again. I'm joined on my left by Sherry Anderson, the treasurer of Clackamas County, and on my right by Ken Sherman, the Oregon Bankers Association counsel. I would just start and remind the members on the right side of the dais, on my right side of the dais, have already voted for this bill in the House. It passed the House. I'm not aware of anybody voting against it in the House. So you've had the policy discussion clearly in the House. It came out of the committee there without objection. And in fact, nobody testified against the bill in the committee. This is the result of several years' worth of work, frankly. At the end of last session, then-Chair Butler of the Revenue Committee asked the banks and the treasurers and others to sit down and see if we could find a better way to do it. Clearly, ORS Chapter 295 was a mismatch, was broken. Depending on who you talk to, it was interpreted in many different ways. So I can tell you that what you see before you is Draft 15, and I think Mr. Sherman is going on a around-the-world cruise this year just from doing all those different drafts. So we did spend a lot of time and a lot of effort with many different stakeholders putting this bill together. And what we have before you today is a bill that we believe is ready to go. Obviously, you're the money committee, but we have handed out kind of a detailed what we think the bill does and accomplishes, and you can read that, and these folks are here to add to that. But on the fiscal piece, the banks are very supportive of the treasurer and the dollars they're going to need to run this program. As I say, we do think it is an improvement. It is other funds. We do expect it to be a permanent position. As Senator Bates mentioned, this program has been in Washington for 35 years. Hopefully, the Oregon program will be equally as successful. They've never had a loss in Washington. There is a role that the bank regulator, the state bank regulator, continues to play in this bill, where if he or she sees a bank in trouble, they can come in and require that bank to collateralize at 110%. So if there is unlikely event of a bank failure, that bank will be responsible for it and it doesn't get to the pool. That's how it's worked in Washington. I believe the one time it did actually have a bank fail. So with that, I would just say we're very supportive. If Ms. Anderson or Mr. Sherman can add to your understanding of the bill, they're happy to do that. We obviously support the A3s. You didn't ask me, but I will tell you we're also supportive of the A5s. The treasurer and others have asked that our bill be used as a vehicle to expand the prevailing wage issue, and we are supportive of what they're trying to do in that amendment. So, but obviously that's your call, and others will speak to the need for that amendment. We have to answer any questions, and like I say, Ms. Anderson and Mr. Sherman are at your command.
I guess, Martinez, the banking industry is only supportive of odd number amendments, or there's an A4 running around up here, too. What's the position on it?
Mr. Chairman, I have to confess I don't know what the A4 is.
Okay. Continue with who's next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sherman. I'm the counsel for the Oregon Bankers Association. I'm looking forward very much to my world cruise, and the only thing I have yet to do is go out and buy the oars. So I want to emphasize the amount of collaboration that went into building this bill over the last 2 years. This is no one industry or group's child. It's had a lot of people involved in the process, the treasurers and the state treasurer and the county financial officers have been real leaders in putting this together, and I think it really is a win-win. It will improve the security situation for public funds throughout the state and will, as several have alluded to, allow smaller financial institutions, although this bill will apply to all size financial institutions, but it will allow smaller financial institutions to participate more fully in taking public funds and being able to conveniently collateralize those public funds. That collateralization project or process, which now requires daily tweaking as the amount of public funds goes up and down, is really quite a strenuous exercise for both the local government and for the financial institutions. So a key benefit of this bill is just to modernize that process with the creation of this pool in which if a bank defaults, it stands behind its own public funds deposits to the extent of its collateral, but then all of the other banks that are participating in the pool stand behind that as well. And that's worked extremely well in the state of Washington, upon which this bill was modeled. They've never had a loss there in the more than 25 years that they've been in operation. We think it's an excellent bill. We've spent a lot of time working on it and fine-tuning it. We think we have built a bill that is actually superior to the Washington collateral pool system, but we're anxious to see it go into place. We think everyone involved in public funds will be a winner. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions? Please.
Hello, my name is Sherry Anderson, and as stated before, I am the treasurer of Clackamas County up in Oregon City. 2 years ago, we attempted to work on this bill, and Representative Crummell was one of the sponsors of that bill originally. This is a much better bill than what we came with as the county treasurers 2 years ago. Our main goal is to get better collateralization, and it's especially important at the county level, as Senator Bates has heard from his constituents, because of the tax collection issue. If you're the city of Oregon City and you have $2 million in your account, you can see from my example here, you, in the event of a default, you have $1.5 million that is at risk of being uncollateralized, and you become a general creditor for the balance. If you're a county and it's November 15th in Clackamas County, it's not uncommon for us to have $250 million in a checking account at U.S. Bank. So the magnitude of the potential loss at the county level is just so much greater that it really became important to the county treasurers to move this forward and to try to see some changes. And we've believed, and we believe strongly still, that the pooled approach is a good approach for the government entities, as it does provide us with a much higher level and potentially 100% collateralization. So we're very supportive. Our committee included representatives from school districts, from cities. So, I mean, if you think about the scope of the government entities that are affected by this, it includes every municipality, every school district, every fire district, every water district. So the scope is actually quite large. So if you have any questions.
Okay. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we were disappointed that we didn't pass this last session, but if it's a better bill, then that's good. Sherry, in your example, as you mentioned, you show $1.5 million at risk. So with the bill, how is this example going to look?
Under the current bill, our funds, we don't have to ask for collateralization. Under the current system, we have to request collateralization. We have to estimate our highest balance. So in the event of a county come about October, we usually bump our collateral. Usually maybe it's $100 million, and we'll bump our request to $250 million, $300 million. The bank then is asked to pledge 25% of that collateral into usually the Federal Home Loan Bank. So they've actually pledged 25% collateral. In the event that they were to default, that 25% is all that is available to us, period. So that is all we're covered under Oregon revised statutes currently. Under the new bill, they would pledge their 10, 20, whatever. The percentage changes depending on the quality of the bank and if there are other issues with the bank. They would pledge that, and as long as we complied with our requirements, which they're built in, we have some responsibility for removing our money as soon as we know that a bank is in poor shape. But in this situation, the remainder of the pool would be available to cover our balances. So the amount of our bank, specific bank's collateral, would not affect us. The entire pool would be available to cover our balances. So as long as that pool is healthy and everyone has pledged their collateral, there should be collateral to cover us 100%.
Okay. follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
On the first page of the bill, in Section 3, I notice that it talks about, Sherry, what you were just talking about, that the public official shall withdraw from the bank depository when there's a notice of a problem. I guess my question is, what effect then does that end up having on the bank? So if you have a bank that's in poor shape and the $300 million that you've mentioned, if you have to go in and withdraw those funds, what is that? What's the effect of the bank going to be? And either one of you.
I'm going to let Ken answer that.
That's a very good question, one that would probably have to be answered on a case-by-case basis, but it's logical to think that it would have a negative impact on the bank to suddenly have all of those deposits withdrawn. When this section was first written, it actually required a more draconian withdrawal, more quickly and more absolutely. And we've worked with the county treasurers and the state treasurer to soften that, to provide a longer period of withdrawal and to allow the financial institutions to retain some deposits just as a practical working matter for the various bodies of local government. But the answer is that it would have, at least theoretically, an impact, a significant negative impact on the financial institution. The likelihood is that financial institution has already got some very serious problems, and they may very well be in receivership at that point. So it's going to be one of those things that's going to have to be managed through on a case-by-case basis. I think what heartens me a little bit is that in 25 years, Washington State has never gotten close to having that happen.
But if I may, Mr. Chair, but the possibility does arise that if that size of a withdrawal, for example, were executed, that it could throw, if the bank was teetering, it could definitely throw them to the brink of disaster for themselves, but also then any depositor, business or individual depositor that had more than $100,000 in some account in that bank, it would potentially then put their assets at risk. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, that's correct. And I might also point out that that's equally true under our existing rules in Chapter 295. Right now, the way that works is that if a bank gets into financial trouble, they kick them up to 110% collateral, and then they have the ability to shut them down. You'd have exactly the same circumstance there.
Okay, it's just that, if I may, Mr. Chair, it's just that under this scenario, the public funds are going to be in a greater security position than they would be currently.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, I'm being coached by the Treasurer's office behind me to also add that in this scenario, that only goes into effect if the bank has not met its 25% collateral promise.
In addition, those are typically tax collection monies or flow-through funds, so they're not generally held in a bank account for an extended period of time. They're held there until we can transfer them to the state pool. So generally, I mean, we maybe keep $70 million in a checking account, or in our various bank accounts, including time deposits and things, but you would not. Most people do not keep those high levels, except for is a transition.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
Oh, excuse me. Senator Bates.
There was one quick question. In your opinion, Martinez, is one FTE at the Treasury level to be adequate for monitoring these many different changes in collateralization at various banks and all the programs are covering? That sounds like a pretty Herculean task.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, we have worked closely with the Treasurer's office as they've set this up, and we have confidence in their ability to predict their workload. There is going to be, they do a lot now. I mean, they don't misunderstand. They do a lot now, so we believe this will be enough. And if it's not, again, the banks are the ones paying for this, and we'll be back in 2009 to see if it does need more or less.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a few other folks. Kate Richardson with State
Office of State Treasurer, and Cynthia Burns with the DOJ. Do you have some things you'd like to inform us about on this bill?
Mr.
And
Chair,
the Dash 3 amendment?
Actually, no. I'm here on, we are related more, I'm here to speak more to the Dash 5 amendments.
You're here to speak to the Dash 5 amendments. Would you mind waiting for a little bit then?
I would not mind at all. Thank you.
Okay. Then what about Mr. Shiprock? Would you want to wait too? Or did you?
I'm here strictly on the Dash 5 amendments.
Okay. As a matter of question, do we want to move the A3 amendments to? Well, I know. And then close. Okay. For the, you know, so everyone knows who's on second here. Plan to do then is we're going to close the public hearing at this point and open a work session. We will, if I can get somebody to make the motion, move the Dash 3 amendments into the bill, at which point then we will close the work session and reopen a public hearing. And listen to the discussion on the A4s and A5s, and then proceed on, and then close that public hearing and adjourn, holding rescheduling the work session for a future date.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash A3.
We're going to close the public hearing on 2901 and we're going to open a work session on 2901.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Now that we're properly in work session, I would move the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 2901.
Senator Johnson moves the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 2901. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. To close the work session on House Bill 2901 and reopen a public hearing on 2901. And we would first of all start out with, is there anyone present who would like to explain to us the A4 amendments? You drew the short straw. Okay. You both drew the short straw.
Okay. Good morning, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff of the State Treasurer's Office. The only difference between the A4 and the A5 is that the A5 puts in an emergency clause because the original bill had a delayed operative date, and this amendment can't be delayed that long. It makes a distinction between the two sections of the bill.
Yes, sir.
Senator Johnson.
Help me understand that if 2901 is going to take some ramping up in your office and additional people and technology work, the A5s have an emergency clause.
Yes.
Help me understand how, when you first conceived of 2901, understanding that you would need some significant time, and now if the A5s are successful, you're faced with an emergency clause.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, actually, for the sections related to the collateralization, that would, the operative date would still remain July 1st, 2008. So if this amendment is adopted, the emergency clause applies to the whole bill. This is as Legislative Council explains it to me. It applies to the whole bill, but then there's operative dates that are different for the collateralization bill. So it would, for the collateralization sections, so that would still remain July 1st, 2008, and those, you can find that on the bottom of page 3 and at the top of page 4 of the A5 amendments. So that would not change the situation for the ramping up for the collateralization work.
Okay. other questions, discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Crummel.
Can you help me? I mean, I'm reading the I got a glimpse at a proposal earlier. I'm reading the amendments. Can you help me understand what the amendments do?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Crummel, and there are people here who can talk overall, kind of give you some background on the full reason for the amendments, but I wanted to first make clear what the A4s and the A5s. The A5s are just a newer version of the A4s. This amendment goes to a definition of funds, public funds, funds of a public agency, and it would, and you'll see on page 1, line 19, it exempts for purposes of 279C the from funds of a public agency from the definition of monies derived from the sale of bonds that are loaned by a state agency to a private entity unless the monies will be used for a public improvement. So, and then it also includes a section, section 32B here, mostly on page 3, that provides a one-time report to a committee of the Bureau of Labor and Industries and to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House regarding these types of programs and these types of loans.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may, why do we want this to be reported to the Bureau of Labor and Industry?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummel, this section 279C goes to overall prevailing wage laws, and this is makes clear that for purposes of the prevailing wage, the funds of a public agency don't include these monies that are loaned from a state agency to a private entity.
So, may I follow up, Mr. Chair? So, if I'm understanding you correctly, then, because I actually don't see the Bureau listed in here, but if I'm understanding you correctly, then that is to for the agency then to be able to identify potentially a public-private partnership type of project in which the public agency has advanced money to the private entity that's probably performing the work, and then BOLI is then going to be able to go back and make sure that the that prevailing wage laws are being followed with regards to that project. Is that what I'm reading into your comments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummel, kind of. 279C and the committee appointed under the 279C, that is a committee of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and you've had a bill that went through the House that did relate to public-private partnerships. This is making clear that these types, this narrow section of these types of monies, programs that have monies loaned just to private entities, unless it's for a public improvement, are not under that public-private partnership. That when this bill was going through, and there are others here who can speak more specifically to this, when this bill was going through the process, the original bill that I'm referring to, 2944, that went through the House, it reached a little farther, I think, than many people were aware, and reached into a state loan programs that loaned that loaned to projects that were purely private, on private land for private use, and were not in the traditional understanding of public-private partnership. And so this makes clear, which is the current state of practice right now, but this makes clear that those specific types of loans from the state loan programs are not considered funds of a public agency for purposes of the prevailing wage law. The bill that's passed through changes the test for what might be considered a public work, and that's why you're seeing this amendment here.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about the definition of public improvement. Could that be a hospital?
Mr. Chair, right. Senator Johnson, I'm not the right person to speak to public improvement It's public improvement as defined in 279A. There are others here more expert than I on that.
Actually, we just happened, Mr. Chair, to have...
For a contract, and then that's on the previous page.
Mr. Shipwreck.
It's called.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Shipwreck, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council. I'm here to talk to you this morning about the A5 amendments. Kate is correct. The House members have already voted on what was House Bill 2944 that would clarify when prevailing wages apply to public-private partnerships. As that bill was going to the floor, literally going to the floor, the Treasurer's Office got a hold of the proponents and said, we need to look at this. It may have an impact on our bond programs. The House members may recall Representative Escobar asked Chair Schaffler, would the issues with the Treasurer's Office bond programs be taken care of? And the Chair answered yes on the Senate side. In the ensuing weeks, I got a huge education on the Treasurer's bond programs. There are hundreds of millions of dollars that go through that the state sells and goes for a wide variety of programs. When the Senate Education Committee passed what now is House Bill 2140 out of committee about a week ago, 10 days ago, there was concerns by a couple of the senators about the bond programs. It became obvious to the proponents of the legislation that we needed to set aside for the interim the whole issue of these bond programs and whether or not they're public-private partnerships, whether prevailing wages apply or not. The effect of the A5 amendments are this. We are exempting them statutorily from consideration of prevailing wage purposes. We're saying, for the time being, these are not public funds, therefore not subject to prevailing wage. The amendment, goes further to ask the state treasurer to prepare a study, if you will, of the entire bonding programs and then report that to the legislature as well as the committee that is referenced. It's the advisory committee appointed under 279C.820. That is the Prevailing Wage Advisory Committee. It's made up of labor, management, local governments, a wide variety of individuals who advise the Bureau of Labor on prevailing wage issues. I would suggest that this report in and of itself would be very valuable information for the legislature to look at these hundreds of millions of dollars that are essentially loaned for a number of public purposes. In fact, as I've learned more about these programs, some of them actually say that the loans must go to projects that are in the public interest, which is what we're trying to define in House Bill 2140. So that's the genesis of this. I spoke to Mr. Martinez. The Treasurer's Office did find this bill as a vehicle for the amendment. The banking industry has a huge interest in seeing that the public-private partnership issue be clarified and graciously agreed to use this as a vehicle for the amendment. And this should erase, hopefully, a remaining doubt about how we're going to settle this whole issue of public-private partnerships. And what the genesis at the end of the day is, we will be coming back to you next session with a recommendation, and then you can decide for yourselves where we'll land on these issues. But at least the issue will be thoroughly vetted. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
It begs the obvious question that if this, and I agree with you, very valuable report is going to be done and we're going to come back and thoroughly vet the issue, is this amendment ripe?
Ripe?
Well, I mean, is this the right time to do it, or would it best be served after the report was formulated? I thought that's what I heard you say.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, the time is at absolutely the right time to begin work on getting this valuable information pulled together and giving the public an opportunity to discuss the public policy.
Let me ask you one more question. Projects in the public interest seems like an enormously wide definition. I would be hard-pressed to think of how you couldn't make that fit any project.
Senator Johnson, that is indeed a problem that we have with the current statutes, and we're hoping to correct in House Bill 2140, which will soon be in front of the Senate. You're correct.
Maybe.
Ms. Richardson.
Excuse me, members. There was a call of the House. We're still in work, public. Okay. And the Vice Chair.
And I'll still keep talking. Senator Johnson, if I just follow up on your question or an answer to your question. If this did not pass, making the default that these be exempt, that's the current state of the law. Right now, if it's no longer 2944, but the Senate version of 2944 passes, it creates a lot of contracting issues as well, because it would de facto turn some of these financing.
Can I ask you that? If 2140 passes, you said?
Yes.
If 2140 passes, it creates.
True. If this passes on its own, it's the current state of the law anyway. It's the current state of existence, I guess, for these programs. But if 2140 passes, though, it has a July 1st, 2007 implementation date, and it would turn the financing agreements and loan agreements to these programs into de facto contracts for public works. That creates an enormous amount of issues, including lender liability issues and practical problems. As I had testified on the Senate side, creates other problems for these programs as well. So since it is, we've worked with the proponents and agree that it makes more sense to leave these programs as they are and then provide this report for them to learn a little bit more about them.
And that's the reason for the dash?
The fives really are just a newer version of the fours.
LFO.
Yeah, I don't know, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure about the dash A5, but we were informed that the A4 would require a conflict amendment when these were put together, so just for information purposes.
Okay. Dr. Bates, Senator Bates.
Well, thank you. A couple questions.
Mr. Bates.
Whatever.
Bates.
Hey, you. 2140 is being hotly contested in the Senate right now, whether it even gets to the floor or not, and I'm not sure what it's going to look like if it does get there. This seems to be a sideboard to it, but sort of put some boundaries on it that we can't go off this bonding. And when we look at the definition of public interest and contracting agency, it leaves open to all the problems we've had. It's not clear. So I think I have an understanding enough to realize that the present law is so vague that we're all over the map on it, and that's why we're in court all the time and all these problems are occurring. So does this bonding include conduit bonding for hospitals, urban renewal bonds, low-income housing, public-private partnership bonds? Are those things all mixed in this bonding issue? When you speak of bonds, are those kind of bonds you're talking about?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, the programs that this would reach, I actually have a sheet here that has a table of those. But it's fairly limited. They're VETS, Water Resources Department, Housing, Department of Energy, for instance, the Small-Scale Energy Loan Program, Office of Emergency Management, and Oregon Economic and Community Development, and the Oregon Facilities Authority, which is affiliated with the State Treasurer's Office. It reaches two conduit programs, the Oregon Facilities Authority and the Economic Development and the Housing are true conduits. Then it also reaches these loan programs. Some of these also have grants. This is only addressing loans. It does not address local.
I guess I'm it now. I'm going to move this bill today.
You don't have a quorum.
Well, Deb Potts did it by himself. A couple more questions real quickly. I know the 2140 has some language of bonding in it also. I think it excluded conduit funding already,
one,
I think.
One program.
One program. This must be sort of a cleanup for the rest of them. Why are we not putting this into 2140? Why are we doing it in a companion bill? Is there a relating to clause problem? What's the difficulty?
I think, Mr. Chair, Bob Shiprock again. I think that you guys are going to go home, and the bill 2140 is
good
on
news,
its way
by the
to
way,
the
thank you.
Is on its way to the Senate. This is a logical vehicle for this issue to be cleaned up in. It's a timing question, frankly, end of session problem. If I may also, just one statement, Mr. Chair. We already consider conduit bonds public funds. That's by rule. And without the passage of this and an opportunity to take a step back and look at these programs, I was very convinced by Kate's testimony in the Senate that we would have, I hate to use the word chaos, but it comes pretty close to it, programs. We can't do this in the next month. That's all the time we've got before the bill goes into effect. So that's the conundrum we've got, and the proponents want to face this issue head first and up front and deal with the problem.
Madam Chair?
Dr. Bates?
If 2140 were to be pulled back to committee for more work and possible amendments, you know, at this late date, there's no reason this couldn't be put into 2140. There's no relating to clause difficulties. There's no conflicts in the bill. These A5s could go into 2140 then. Is that correct? My thought is there's a strong possibility you'll have two bites of the apple on this. And I don't know which way the 2140 is going. And if 2140 does come back to committee, it would seem to me that'd be a great place to put this in and make it a cleaner bill. Make 2140 cleaner and keep this bill with the A3s the way it is and run them both through.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I think that's theoretically possible. Whether the reality is that could happen or not, frankly, the Treasurer's Office didn't want to take that chance.
Just to echo Kate's testimony, you're throwing the dice in doing that. You would, in my opinion, want an assurance that the bill comes back to the floor and passes.
And having, Madam Chair,
follow up.
And having this amendment in both bills wouldn't be a conflict either.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Now I've got a 9:30 meeting. Leadership again. Okay.
Mr. Chair, just as you reassume the gavel, we had gone through all of the people that had signed up to testify, but the sheet had been pulled, and there may be others I didn't have the chance to ask.
Okay, is there anyone else that wishes to? Okay. thank you. We have the sheet up here in our possession, so we'll add the name. By the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jessica Adamson with Associated General Contractors here to testify in favor of the -5 amendment. We think that this is an important amendment to clarify the issues in 2140 that have been raised. But additionally, there was some conversation in previous testimony about whether the definition of public interest and actually the public works definition, which includes public interest as a criterion, would trip these projects with or without this amendment. And the way the current law works, which is what 2140 is designed to fix, is that there's a two-part test to determine whether something is subject to prevailing wage. The first part is whether the project is carried on or contracted for by a public agency in the public interest. And then the second part of the test is whether there are public funds. This is the problem with the current law, because we know in public-private partnerships that there are public funds involved. But the question becomes, are they carried on or contracted for by a public agency in the public interest? And that gets into the very technical nature of what does a development agreement look like, the commas, the semicolons, and all of that. And that's very fun and interesting, but it's also not very clear. And so what 2140 does and what this bill helps to fix is it clarifies, regardless of whether or not you have these that first part of the test going on, if it's a private project with X number of public funds, and that X being $750,000, or a certain percentage of public occupancy, public agency occupancy, then it's subject. And then we make a series of changes as to what we consider public funds to be. This gets at that issue. If you don't, because these are privately owned projects, if we exempt these, the sale of these bonds and they're given to private entities from the definition of public funds, under no circumstance will those projects be subject to prevailing wage. First of all, they aren't owned or carried on for, contracted for by a public agency. That's what the definition of public improvement is all about. By saying that these aren't public funds, unless they're given for a public improvement, we guarantee that when they're used by a private entity, that they will not, even with the current definition of public works, that they won't come in and be subject to prevailing wage, which we believe to be consistent with what we intended in the first place, and also gives us a chance to look at this issue in the interim, bring it back, while also creating this necessary bright line standard for public-private partnerships through 2140. The time is right, in our opinion, to do both, to clarify what are and what are not public funds, in addition to creating the bright line standard on public-private partnerships. This will reduce litigation, provide certainty, solve problems for affordable housing, clarify the rules of the game for contractors, and meet some of the needs of labor. This is a good all-around bill that this 2140, this bill, and this amendment will make that better. We urge your support.
Senator Johnson.
thank you for that testimony. excuse me. Ms. Adamson, you may not be the best person to ask about this, but one of the curiosities that I had was, with respect, and I'm talking about 2140, you just testified very heartily in support of it, as we said, that's what it sounded like.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out whether or not economic development inducement packages or tax abatements would trigger that $750,000 limit.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the 2140 also clarifies, and that's where I believe the conflict amendment would be required with respect to this bill and in this amendment should it be adopted. 2140 contains a provision that also, under this list of funds of a public agency, they don't include tax credits or abatements. So it would state in the law very clearly for the first time that in an enterprise zone or similar arrangement, those would not be public funds. This would solve, from our perspective, a long-standing debate over those issues that clear back in 2001, even the 99 session, late into the hours of the final morning of the session, fighting over whether those should be subject to prevailing wage or not, projects in enterprise zones that receive the tax abatement. This 2140 would fix that problem, be very clear that tax credits and abatements are not public funds. therefore would not trip prevailing wage.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you for that explanation. That was very helpful. How about inducements out of, say, the Governor's Strategic Reserve Fund? Those funds, definitionally, I think, are fairly elastic. And if a company was provided an inducement package to come and build a large physical plant here, what's your opinion about how 2140 speaks to those projects?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think it depends in large part how that package is put together, whether, as I understand it, there are times where the inducement package includes we'll build the road or we'll fix the water main if you'll build your facility here. That I do not believe would trip it in the event of the building of the structure. If it's we'll hand you $1 million in funds in a direct grant, yes, that would trip it. If it is, we will provide
Train your workforce.
We do not believe, because it doesn't go to the actual structure, it doesn't go to construction. It's an incentive package, but it's not about we'll build your building for you. That's what this is about. It's for the construction. It's a it's funds given for the purpose of construction.
One last follow-up.
And
you believe that the line is bright enough in the bill so that there's no ambiguity about what the statement you just made?
Mr. Chair, Senator
Johnson, in 2140.
I do believe so.
Thank you.
Senator Richard.
I have a question for Dallas. It appears to me that there is a significant, if not huge, fiscal impact on in the A5 amendment on one side, and 2140 was the 2944 bill amended into it. I would wonder if that's the fiscal is working on that. We're probably talking multiple hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I really don't know. From the treasurer's standpoint, I don't believe there's a fiscal for preparing the report that's required under the amendment. As to the other issues surrounding prevailing wage projects and the like, I am not conversant. You're talking about different bills there and so on. But the amendment here that requires the advisory committee and then a report would have no fiscal from Treasury. They would do it with existing resources.
You're talking the A3?
The A5.
A5.
At least as it pertains to the Treasurer's Office reporting on the use of those bond programs. I'm not the knowledgeable person about the prevailing wage issues at all.
One other thing, Mr. Chair, that might be very helpful when we bring this bill back is for those of us that haven't sat on the substantive committees is to know which bill is which right at this moment. What's been amended into what and what is proposed to be amended into what and to what effect. And having that little table might be very useful.
Thank you, Senator. That would be... The chair certainly, given the complexity as it appears to be of this, has to be pretty well guided with clear path on this to get into a policy issue of this magnitude in this the Ways and Means Committee. I am somewhat curious about if there's a bill still languishing over on the Senate side, and I see the Treasurer is having Treasurer's office is having some concern here, but I'm somewhat concerned why. Why that shouldn't be the A4, A5 shouldn't be dealing with the prevailing wage shouldn't be amended into that bill if possible rather than into this particular budget bill. But we will, yes, I'm waiting for you.
You want me to speak to that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Okay, good. Mr. Chair, again, Kate Richardson for the State Treasurer's Office. I also have Cynthia Burns here from the Department of Justice, who works on both sides, the substantive part of this bill and also on this issue. To your question, House Bill 2944, this goes to Senator Johnson's question, but I think it also answers yours. 2944 passed the House. It was in the Senate committee. It died in a Senate committee. And apparently the 2944 was moved into a different bill, 2140.
Wait,
which passed.
What is 2944?
2944 was a prevailing wage bill that came out of the House. So, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, 2944 was the bill that got rid of the two-part test that was testified to before and created essentially a one-part test, which is if you had public funds in your project, then you would be prevailing wage. And
any amount of public funds?
$750,000 or more.
Okay.
And so that bill on the Senate side was moved into 2140. I did testify at that hearing, but it moved in the same, there was a public hearing and work session, it moved at that time. And it is on its way to the Senate floor. So there is 2944 no longer exists, it's my understanding. 2140 has already moved out of a committee that no longer is open. And whether 2140 passes or not, this can stand on its own.
What can stand?
I'm sorry, the A5 amendments to 2901 can stand on its own.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, these amendments are essentially, they would be a continuation of the existing law. If 2140 doesn't pass, the two-part test stays in place. And under that test, you have to have both a contract by a public agency to sort of do the construction type work and public funds. So the way the state's loan programs work, under the current test, we aren't swept in because the agency is only loaning money. They're not contracting for the work. So this would then sort of reiterate the current law, which is that if you have just loan money in a project, you don't have a public work. But then in the interim, it would also still provide the report for people to look at these projects and decide what they want to do.
Other?
Mr. Chair.
But at this point, the Treasurer's Office is advocating for the A5s to go in some vehicle to clarify the bond question. And you're either trying to put them into 2901 or, as Dr. Bates spelled out, put them into 2140 to try to make sure that the bond program, I'm not quite sure what you're trying to do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think you captured that pretty accurately. For all intents and purposes, 2140 has passed a Senate committee and is headed to the floor. Our issue was not addressed, and we've worked with the proponents to address it.
Then let me restate this, Mr. Chair, by your leave. If 2140 is not amended, the Treasurer's Office has a problem.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the original 2140, we do not have a problem with that bill. And for the amendments that went into it, we are also not opposed to those amendments except as they do not address this issue. So that's why you think I've been doing this long enough that I could be a little smoother than that. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, if our issue is addressed, we do not have any problems at all with 2140. If our issue is not addressed, we are concerned that here or wherever, then we are concerned that the current state of 2140 will have a negative impact on the state loan program.
Thank you.
Sorry,
thank
I didn't
you,
say that the first time.
In
light of a lengthy discussion on this, we're going to, unless someone has one last burning question, call it thing, and I'm going to request that Mr. Richardson make an appointment to come see me sometime in my office so that we can talk about this in a little more detail. I am, however, as far as 2140 is concerned on the Senate side, I assume you have the same rules on the Senate side that you can refer it back to committee and amend it and move it out if the will is there to do that. So you might be prepared to think about that too as we commit. I am struck the more we get into this, however, with the this is an incredible amount of policy things that keep running around and a whole hodgepodge of bills that many of the members of the committee are completely unfamiliar with other than in a most superficial way. And the suggestion made earlier that there be some kind of a path drawn, outline drawn would be most helpful for us before we do go to work session, if we go to work session on that portion of the and I do have Representative Crummell and then Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question is with regards to the A5 or the A4 amendments. I want to know if the sponsor, the primary sponsor of the bill, and the chair of the substantive committee that this bill came from have been apprised of these amendments and if they agree with them. Because if they won't, I won't support them.
Mr. Chair, in the Senate side, this, if 2901, this is the substantive committee. It was referred directly to this one. We have not seen the others.
Then, Mr. Chair, for clarification, I need to know that the sponsor of the bill and that the chair of the House committee that this bill came out of are in concurrence with these amendments. Because if they're not, again, I'm not going to support them. Because the House rules state that a substantive change to a bill has to have the support of the sponsor of the bill and the chair of the substantive committee that it came from.
Yes. Representative Galizio.
Yeah, I did have a burning question. I'm a big fan, big NBA fan, and I grew up in Los Angeles. And I want to know why the state treasurer's office didn't invite me to meet Magic Johnson. That's my question.
I gather the treasurer's office is in trouble.
Yeah, they're in a lot of trouble.
Okay, so I didn't have anything to do with that deal. Okay, with that, we will reschedule a work session, repost a work session for this bill at a later date. And we are closing the public hearing. We are adjourned.